ladies and gentlemen, and fellow golfers, for your entertainment.
It's the Golf to Go Hour with Frank LaRosa, brought to you by Hagen Oaks, America's most awarded golf facility, and Naturewood Home Furnishings, where it's all about choices and always about quality.
Welcome to another episode of the Golf to Go Radio Hour here on Sports 1140 KHTK. Hi, I'm Frank LaRosa. Scott Marsh beside me here, and we're here to tell you what's going on in the world of golf here in Northern California, and hopefully have you learned some things, have you enjoy some things, have you understand what we know. The game of golf is a lot of fun. David Sutherland, our first guest today. David is the certainly everybody knows he's the brother of Kevin Sutherland, but David in his own right played on tour, and he's currently the women's golf coach at Sacramento State University. You know David very well, Scott.
I do. He's a good man. He's a very good golfer, and he's a great coach. And I know his son also is a very good golfer, and will be a part of the Memorial Day tournament over at Anta Hoffman we're going to be talking about this week as well.
And speaking of the Memorial, John Rochelle, who is the founder and tournament director of the Memorial Amateur Championship at Ansel Hoffman. 25 years that's been going on, and you know, this is something, an idea he had, and certainly came to fruition.
No doubt. And Ansel Hoffman, that'll be a great weekend out there, and I know they've been talking about it all year long. This is the tournament out there. The course will be in tremendous condition, and that is going to be quite an event.
Mark Sherman, PGA, is the head golf professional at Green Valley Country Club in Fairfield, and Mark is a great guy, and he's a friend of the show, and we've had an opportunity to play that course. We're going to talk about what you can expect at Green Valley and opportunities for membership as well.
No doubt. Great talking to him. It's a tremendous course. You and I, we got beat up last time we played there because the wind was up, but it's a spectacular course. And hopefully Mark can give us some tips how to play better next time we go out there.
That's what we're looking for. Tips on how to play better. This is the Golf to Go Radio Hour. And we're going to be right back with David Sutherland right after these messages.
It's the Golf to Go Hour with Frank LaRosa.
You are listening to the Golf to Go Radio Hour here on Sports 1140 KHTK. Hi, I'm Frank LaRosa, along with Scott Marsh. We are excited to welcome Mr. David Sutherland. David is has been a friend to this radio station for many, many years. David is currently the head women's golf coach at Sacramento State. Is that the university? Is that what it's called now? It was called something different when I went there, David.
Actually, yes, that's a good question. It's actually just Sacramento State. That is it.
All right.
Actually, if you went, it'd be California State University, Sacramento would be its formal thing, but it's not Sacramento State University.
All right. You'll see that I'm dating myself right away.
That's fine. I didn't know either until I started working there.
You just finished up another golf season. David, how many years now at Sac State?
I have coached there 15 years.
Oh,
and I
gosh.
Would have absolutely lost a bed. My last year was in 2006 playing, and I knew I wanted to do something in Sacramento. I had been really hurt, and so playing much longer was not realistic. And I kind of kicked around active school teaching. I taught social studies over Christian Mars for a while, but I also was kicking around the idea of working for the First Tee and just finding something to do because I really love Sacramento golf. And it kind of just fell into place. The opportunity kind of arose that I could coach. And I thought, well, that could be kind of fun. And I felt like Sacramento would be great to have a good Division I program here in Sacramento. I thought there was the resources available to do that. You know what I mean? Like we just can kind of mobilize the community and, you know, because we have great golf courses and we have great support from all sorts of people, and the Mortons would be in the top of that list, quite frankly. And so I felt like maybe that would be kind of a fun thing to do. And then the biggest thing that happens that makes you stick so long is then you start coaching kids and they become like sons and daughters and you start really becoming connected to them. And then you don't want to leave anymore. That's the, you know, but I would never have thought when I first started coaching, I would do it for 15 years. I would have said somebody was crazy. I would have thought maybe 3 or 4 years, you know, move on to something else.
You alluded to a couple of things I just want to bring people up to date with. Most people I know, I'm sure that you played on tour for a number of years. And as you mentioned, injuries kind of got the best of you. And then you alluded to Christian Brothers, and that's the high school that you and Kevin went to. So, yeah, you are a Sacramento guy. You learned your golf chops at Hagen Oaks, like so many others. And here you are now, 15 years into a program at Sac State. You know, it's been a lot of fun to kind of watch how the program has grown over those years. And, you know, for many years, I think that we didn't take Sac State sports seriously. You know, it was kind of like, well, that's our local college. But, you know, there's a sense of pride and commitment that wasn't there before.
One of the interesting things about coaching and actually getting into recruiting is that, and this is going to sound kind of funny, but oftentimes the farther you get away from Sacramento, the easier it is to recruit. You have to think of that from the perspective of a kid that is, say, from, I have a guy on my team from Utah, Tess Blair, or a kid who's from, I have a guy on my team from New Zealand. I mean, Sacramento is a great place to go to college. It's got awesome golf courses. The weather is amazing. It's a super nice city. The campus is in a nice part of town, East Sacramento. So when they do the campus tours and they go around to, say, four or five campuses, I almost always have it at the top of my list. But the bottom line is, and you're right about saying that, which is that, hey, I'm from Sacramento and I didn't go to Sacramento State. I went to Fresno State, and there is a lot of kids that do want to leave to go away to college. And there's nothing wrong with that. My own two sons have done that, but it doesn't mean that there isn't a lot of interest in going to Sacramento State, not just from people from different parts of the world, but also from different parts of Northern California. And I also would say that in my 15 years, I think I've always had at least one Sacramento kid on my team. I don't know that I've ever not had a gal or a guy from Sacramento on the team, maybe once or twice. But the perception of school is changing. It is, again, a great place to work. It is not a hard place to recruit to, at least in women's golf. I mean, I don't, you know, it's different than other sports that deal with more facility issues and things of that nature. But for women's golf, at least, I found it to be, I don't want to say easy recruit. Recruit is never easy. It's always a competitive environment. But I find it to be kind of fun to recruit to Sacramento, because you're kind of introducing a place that many people have never heard of before to a new person, and you see it through their eyes again. And again, I mean, you take a person to downtown Sacramento and all the trees, and it's really pretty, and out to the golf courses and on the campus. And it's really, you'd be shocked at how many people from different parts of the world just love it there. Yeah. First choice type of thing. You know what I mean?
I've had the chance to be around some of your players over the years, and you've had some pretty incredible players.
I have. Yes. We have had three or four gals now that have been ranked in the top 200 in the world that have played for us. I think we have a current guy on our team, Jennifer Koga, who's been the Big Sky Player of the Year for two consecutive years. I think she's got a really reasonable chance of getting ranked in the top 200. Why that's important, by the way, is that that starts to get you in a position where you might get into the Augusta Women's Amateur. It allows you to have exemptions in a variety of other tournaments. And it's also just kind of cool. I mean, I was never ranked in the top 10 in the world when I was an amateur. I don't think I was, at least. You know what I mean? And, you know, but the reality of coaching, though, is that I actually think if you get into coaching to win tournaments or win conference championships, and I know it might be a little bit different for me because I played for so long, I do think you're getting into the wrong reasons. I mean, I think the best thing about coaching by far is the chance to make a positive impact in a kid's life. I mean, it's really the thing by far the most that gets you excited to do it longer. It's like almost like a drug. When you have a kid tell you that you changed their life or you had this impact on what they're doing now, I have folks I've coached now that are in their mid-30s, and that's by far the best thing about coaching. I mean, you know, we've won a lot of conference championships, we've won a lot of tournaments, and all of those things kind of just fade away. Like, they kind of go through your memory like a blur, but the ones that really stick are when you have kids that came to you, they maybe were in difficult situations with their family or with within their own lives, and if you can make a positive impact in their reflecting on their time that they had with you in a way that was positive, it's really by far the best thing about coaching.
That's
nothing else
thing.
Close.
Yeah, that's a really good thing. We're talking with David Sutherland, head women's coach at at Sacramento State. And I know my co-host here, Scott Marsh, goes way back with you, and you guys were talking about injuries that you suffered on the basketball court. Did you learn anything on the golf course from David, Scott?
I will tell you about that as well, because I did. I got shamed one day in the KHTK golf tournament by David. We'll talk about that. But I remember, because back in the day, we used to go up and play three-on-three basketball a lot. A lot of the guys from KHTK, the Rise guys, and Jason Ross and myself, and Pat and Tom over at KNCI, and David would come up and play. And this was when he was still playing tour golf. And I remember a couple of times bumping David on shots and like his wrist actually getting a little hurt. And I thought, oh my God, I just ruined the pro career of David Sutherland. Yeah, no. David's got this intensity on him on the basketball court. I can only imagine like he's a golf course, David, because we had some knockabout, dragabout battles, all in good fun. But boy, we were intense in those days.
Yes. Yeah, that was, I played a lot of, I tried to do different sports there in the off season. I think most of that would have been like in the wintertime, because, you know, back then the tour used to have a proper finish. It doesn't have that anymore. You know, you finished in the end of October. Your first term was usually either the Hope in early January. So you had this like 2 months break. And, you know, I actually tried to get away from golf. You know, like would take 3 or 4 weeks off and don't touch a club. But, you know, I just love going out and doing something completely different. You know what I mean? And then with a crew of guys, I also remember playing with Jason Williams.
Yes, Jay Will showed up once.
Yeah, and that was fun because we went and played golf. And then I was like, okay, if we're going to play golf together, then we got to play basketball together. So he came out and played basketball. And that's when I realized I just completely stink at basketball. I mean, like, this guy's dunking and like he's just like the most athletic stud. I'm like, wait a minute, on the basketball court, you look really short. Insanely athletic, and now you're just like making me look like a fool. But yeah, those are good times.
It was fun. So we'd always have some celebrities. Pat and Tom would bring country artists if they were in town playing at Arco Arena. They'd come play during the day. Those were great days. Now the golf memory, Frank, was David was one of our celebrity golfers in our KHTK golf tournament. We had a tournament over many years, and so we were up at Winchester, and David and I were playing together. I don't know if you remember this, David, or not, but I was a horrible golfer, and you know, I golf left-handed. And so we got to, I think it was 16, maybe 17 up there. I think it was 16 because that's the par three over the water. And you challenged me that you could beat me with my left-handed clubs. And so you swing away with my clubs, I swing away with mine. And I remember I'm like 30 feet out in the rough, and I've got to make this thing to have the hole with you. And somehow God shined on me, and he put that ball in there, and I ended up having the hole, I think, with you with a four, with a bogey. And I was like, this is the greatest thing ever, because I never would have heard the end of it from you, I'm sure.
Yeah, that's right. I think that would be like the 14th hole, if I remember right. Yeah,
yeah, you might be right. I'm probably breaking the hole. But
you actually will hit, shots left-handed if you're competing as a pro for a couple of reasons. One, physically it's good for your back to swing the opposite way that you're swinging, like, and you're hitting like thousands of balls a week. The other one is too, is that you never do know, like probably once or twice a year you hit it in some really bad spot on a golf course and you have to hit one left-handed, and so you actually do take it out, and usually you just flip your club around. I actually got pretty good with using the back of a ping putter, you know, like I could smack it about 50 yards and actually put a little spin on it. But you actually would do it. So it wouldn't be like you would never have hit a shot left-handed before. But
It's a good thing I was able to keep your game sharp then.
There you go. Yeah, that was a practicing tool for me. Yeah.
You know, the notion of the kind of golf that we play, Scott, and the kind of golf that tour players play, it's just – there really is no comparison. I remember a clinic that that David put on at Hagen Oaks, and there was a tree down the first fairway. I don't know. It had to be, I'm guessing, 180 yards down the fairway, and it was a really tall tree. And David said, well, I'm going to show you how to control different clubs. So I'm going to hit the same shot with a 3-iron, a 6-iron, and a 9-iron. And I think that those are the clubs he picked. And they all had the exact same trajectory over that tree. And I was blown away that, you know, that someone could have that much control over his body, not first of all, but the club face, to be able to do that. And David, that's obviously, that's a lot of hours and
yeah, which
a lot of skill.
what you're trying to do there, by the way, the reason that you can do that is for a couple of reasons. One, if you ever notice, like you see the guys in the trees and they're not hitting the tree very often, it's because you practice a lot on like hitting it on a spot. Like you're trying to hit it through something or under something. But the other thing too is just controlling your trajectory in the wind. And so you'll do a lot of practicing with how you shift your shoulders and where you place the ball on your stance so that you can have control of your golf ball. You know what I mean? And so, those are, I don't know that I would be uniquely skilled at doing that. I'm sure Kevin could do just as well as I did, if not better. But those are really fun things for with crowds or you got people there doing a thing, because you really can show, you know, that, you know, what you're trying to do is not just hit it a long ways, or you're not just trying to hit it actually even straight. You're actually trying to control the golf ball, you know? And so, you know, I do think that the golf has become much more of a power game. You saw that, you know, this weekend at Southern Hills, where, you know, the golf course is so long now. I think it's 7,600 yards. And the last time they played the Open there, I think they had a step around 7,000 yards. So it's like 600 yards further now than it was just 20, 25 years ago. And guys are still, you know, what was the playoff at? Like 5 under or 6 yeah. under, perhaps, something like that. You know, by the way, one thing about that tournament you saw this weekend, the one thing I will kind of push back on some of the things I saw, I know it's probably been a topic of conversation. I've never been leading a major, but I have led PGA Tour events on the 18th hole. Just for whatever your stance, you don't choke on the 18th hole. Like, I know they got me double. You've got a bad swing. Where you choke is on the first hole. You know what I mean? It's, you know what I mean? Like, that's where guys will choke, you know? It's the first hole. It's the front end. Once you get to 18, you know, it is so hard on tour to know exactly how you stand. It isn't a basketball game. You know, he doesn't know, for example, that a guy in the group ahead of him didn't birdie the last hole. You hear a bunch of roars and cheers. You don't know what all that stuff means. I know, for example, I was on the 18th hole of a PGA Tour event. I actually had a one shot lead, and I was tied for the lead. And Scott Hoke eagled the last. He chipped in.
Wow.
But I had no way of knowing, oh, that was a, was it for him? Was it for somebody else? You know what I mean? I hit a good shot, but I could have skinked it just like he did. I kind of felt bad for him because he was taking some heat. It seemed like from the media and people like that for basically looking like he tensed up or choked it. And I'm like, wait a minute. I don't think you choked it the minute you walked in the 18th tee. It doesn't work that way. I mean, you might choke on the 18th green when you see the clubhouse and go, oh, wow, I'm tight. I got to make a three footer. But not walking from the 17th green to the 18th tee. It's just a hard hole. 18th hole Southern Hills is such a hard hole. And the idea that he's the first guy to hit it right in the water is sort of silly. I mean, in fact, if you look back at the other guys, I'm not so sure Zalatoris didn't hit it further right than he did. And certainly Justin Thomas could have easily hit the hill and kicked in the water. He just had his ball accident in the waters and there didn't. I mean, anyways, I know we didn't come here to talk about that, but I was just on my mind.
No, I love that. You know, that I love the player's perspective, you know, and as always, you know, we never have enough time to complete the conversations we want.
Yeah,
to. We're going to have you back. One of the things I was going to ask you, though, before we wrap this up is how your son Matthew is doing. And I noticed as I was, we got John Rochelle coming up to talk about the Memorial Amateur at Ansel Hoffman. And I noticed Matthew is going to play in that tournament.
And I'm going to caddy in it. Yeah, I've caddied for Matthew for probably 3 or 4 years now. I'm not so sure it's my favorite tournament of the summer that Matthew plays in. I just love Ansel. I kind of, in addition to Hagenhurst, I grew up out there. But Matthew's doing really well. I had a chance to caddy for him last year in the U.S. Amateur at Oakmont. That was an awesome experience. He's played well at Fresno. It's, you know, he's really embraced golf and playing golf. He's super talented. I mean, I think he'll probably turn pro and give it a shot. He's got a couple more years left of college, though. But you know, he's got a college win. He's got a couple of college top 2 or 3 finishes. He loves the game. You know, and golf's one of those games too, where, you know, when you get that bug, it's like an addiction. You know what I mean? Like, you either get it or you don't, and he's definitely got it. Like, he, He loves to go out to the golf course. You know, he's still very public golf at heart, where he just loves to play and would be happy to play any golf course he can get on. And certainly it's been really fun to kind of, as a parent, go back and go to a lot of the same tournaments that I played in when I was his age and see them from a different perspective.
Well, best of luck this weekend. It's the always entertaining David Sutherland, women's golf coach at Sac State. And we have to have David back. He's always got something good to say. And we learned something today. This is the Golf to Go Radio Hour. We'll be back in just a moment with John Rochelle to talk about the Memorial Amateur Golf Tournament.
It's the Golf to Go Hour with Frank LaRosa.
We are back here on the Golf to Go Radio Hour. Frank LaRosa, along with Scott Marsh. And as we mentioned when talking with David Sutherland a moment ago, we are pleased to welcome John Rochelle. John is the founder and tournament director of the Memorial Amateur Championship. Now, you may or may not have heard about this tournament, but if you haven't heard about it, you've been under a rock, because this is the 25th year of this tournament. And John, you know, what drives a person to decide, you know, I think I'm going to start a pretty impressive tournament, and now here you are 25 years later, still working at it?
Again, in 1993, a lot of you might remember years ago, the Sacramento County Championship held in July at Ansel was a 72-hole tournament. It was 36 holes over 2 weekends. And then in the early 80s, for some reason, it was reduced to just 1 weekend, 36 holes. And I used to play in the event, but it kind of frustrated me because I always liked the idea of the 72-hole format. But they went to 36, and I thought perhaps it diminished the stature of the tournament. So I was actually playing golf with Phil Areno one day, and we were talking about 54 holes was an ideal time or limit for amateur tournament. I thought that was perfect. And so at the time, I also remembered that in the middle of July, it was extremely hot and we were playing 6.5 hour rounds. And I got to think, and I go, you know what? What we need to do is find a date earlier in the year, which I characterized it as bookending the state fair. You start the amateur golf season in Sacramento area, Memorial weekend, and it's Labor Day weekend, and anything in between was, you know, tournaments. And I checked with Ansel Hoffman, the Parks Recreations Director, and found that that weekend was not occupied by any longstanding tournament. And I made a proposal to the Golf Council in 1993 that they should maybe move the county championship to Memorial Weekend rather than the middle of July, make it a 54-hole event instead of a 36. At that time, for whatever reason, they declined to want to do that. And so I said, okay, well, I'll create my own tournament. And everything else followed. I went through the Parks and Recreation, and this is the 2 or 3 year process, laying out my ideas and the foundation. And one of the things that I was maybe a little bit over optimistic about is I didn't want it to be a tournament. I wanted it to be natural. And part of the process was, of course, recognizing what Memorial Weekend is about. And got the approval in 1997 from Ron Suter to go with it. And everything else is history.
And there is a tremendous amount of history in the 25 years. You've had some incredible participants. Speaking with David just a moment ago, we noted that his son is going to play. Actually, Kevin Sutherland's son is going to play as well. But talk about some of the players over the years that have been notable and some of the winners. There's some impressive names.
Well, Spencer Levine played it when he was still in high school and actually did very well. Matt Betancourt played the event initially. And then, you know, there's been, of course, Cameron Champ, Cameron Tregali, Kurt Kitayama. I'm not sure if I pronounced that correctly. Sebastian Vasquez. Sebastian Vasquez, if I recall correctly, when he was in the event, which is probably 7 or 8 years ago, came in fifth the year that he was the number one ranked amateur in the world.
Wow.
Gung Yang, who won the U.S. Amateur, came in third in the Memorial the year he won the U.S. Amateur. There's been just, you know, and quite frankly, there's some players that I didn't realize until later when I hear their name or I hear they're from this area and I look them up and I go, I'll be darned that, you know, they entered. Max Homa entered the event, but had to withdraw. And I think it was had to do with Cal going to NCAA regionals or whatever. But it's, yeah, it's been a pleasure to see that what comes through here.
Yeah, I noticed John Catlin won a couple of times, and he's playing on the European Tour now. Ben Corfee from El Macero won. But, you know, as I was looking through the list, one of the things that fascinated me was a player named Jim Wilson, who won it three years in a row. I don't know Jim, but I got to believe he's a pretty good player.
Jim had been, he's from the Chico area, as I recall, and Jim had been on the professional tour and then got his amateur status back. And then he played it for 3 years and won it 3 years in a row. Incredible golfer. Shots, you know, I was very, very impressive guy. And then for whatever reason, he stopped playing. But.
And this tournament runs May 28th, 29th, and 30th. And I know, Scott, you've got some plans to go out there and kind of watch these guys play, huh?
Yeah, I want to check it out because I play Ansel a lot, and I want to see what good golfers play that course like, and from the tips, too. So that's going to be a lot of fun. John, I'd love to know just what are the requirements for somebody to get into this tournament? How do you qualify, and how many participants will you have for the three-day event?
Well, you know, it's funny. When the COVID-19 pandemic came about a couple of years ago, we had to do some adjustments. We actually ended up having it in July and not Memorial Weekend. And then, but sometimes I always try to find the positive in everything. And what I saw then was because I wasn't going to get a full fill, which at that time was 120 contestants. I have had as many as 144. It just becomes too unmanageable. Yeah. But so it was normally going to be 120. Well, I had to reduce it, and I reduced it to 90. And then I realized that's kind of the ideal number. I communicate with other tournament directors across the country, specifically the Azalea Invitational in Charleston, South Carolina, because that's where I kind of grew up, and talk to them about their, you know, the nuances and things they do. And that's one of the common themes, it seems, that to keep the entrance number lower and raise the quality of the player. And so that's starting 2 years ago, we went to the lower number of players. I do have the discretion to work it better. And this year I did allow 99. One of the things we also started a couple, or last year, which I think is an improvement for everyone, including the spectators, is that they all go off in threesomes. No longer foursomes Saturday and Sunday and threesomes Monday. Now it's threesomes Saturday, Sunday, and Monday. That, I think, allows for a lot better conditions to play the event. People will tell you, if you ask, I have done some modifications on the course with respect to some years I played it as a par 70, other years par 72. A couple years I flipped the nines, where number one was the now current number 10, and they would finish on number current nine, which made that number 18. And I've just always kind of done that just to keep things, you know, I don't know, exciting and change a little bit. You're going to note, I sent you a copy of the scorecard, that this year the number 10 will be playing as a par four. The tee will be up to the front of the, by the white thing, but it'll be a par four. I think the yardage on it is there. It's like 480 or something like that. But number 16 will be playing as a par five all 3 days. And they all, the tee will always be in the back part of the number 16.
Well, that number 16 should always play as a par five, regardless of where the tees are, as far as I'm concerned, because that's one of the toughest holes in Sacramento, with that huge tree in the middle of the fairway and that dogleg right. What is there an index requirement for people to get in, or how do you build the field?
So part of this evolution, it used to be, I think when I first started the event, I think you had to have an index of three or better. What I would do is I would look at what was the limitations for instance, to enter the U.S. amateur. And if their thing was three, index of three, then that I used it. And then I began to lower it as the quality of the field became evident, obviously, because last year, I think there were eight different nationalities that played in the event. And it's a WAGR event. And for those that don't know what WAGR is, it's World Amateur Golf Rankings. But so, you know, and coupled with that, I would just, I lost my train of thought. Go ahead.
That's okay. Obviously, it's a stacked field. And I'm just curious, how many entries do you get to get down to the 99? Because obviously, it's so competitive. I mean, can anybody just try to be in a part of this event? I'm sure there's a lot of locals who just like, God, I'd love to take my chances out here.
Well, and that's exactly right. And that's where I do have that discretion. You know, we were talking about how to get in it. And I don't have an affirmed thing now of 1.7 index, but that kind of has been to me the cutoff. But it actually evolved now that it's invitational and it's also director exempt. So that if you don't meet exemptions, which I post, then you can request for a director approval. And I do that quite frequently. I look at all the, you know, many different factors, but there isn't any particular thing about initially it was, you know, first come, first serve. Now it's more apply, let me look at, and if you get in, you get in. And I will comment that a lot of people don't realize it, but sometimes within the last 2 or 3 weeks, you'll get withdrawals. I got my first entries last year in December. Well, some of those players, and they're, you know, across the country, things happen. For instance, if they make the NCAAs, I give them a full refund and let them play that. And then I'm having a waiting list, but I'm having withdrawals at the same time. I just had a withdrawal yesterday. And then for the waiting list, I choose who I believe is going to be, you know, the best option for the tournament.
Bottom line, it's going to be competitive. It's going to be great. It's going to be played at almost 7,000 yards. Ansel Hoffman is a great test. You've got some of the best players in the country, and they'll be looking to stack up some points as they continue in their amateur careers. John Rochelle, congratulations on 25 years of success, and we wish you as many more years as you plan to stay at the helm of this event.
John, just one real quick question for somebody who wants to come out and watch the event. Is it free just to come out to Ansel over the weekend, or have somebody do that?
It is. And I'm glad you brought that up, because that's one of my prime goals, is to get increased spectators. Now, we used to get quite a few, as you might suspect, when Cameron Champ played, because he had, you know, quite a following. But I really encourage it. And I'll say real quickly, I've been to every major tournament in the world except the British Open. And I did have a chance to go there in 62 when I lived in Germany. And I'm a Masters patron. So I've been to these tournaments, but the best tournament I ever enjoyed was the Walker Cup in Monterey in 1982, because it was up close, personal. You got high level golf. And that's the same thing you can experience out here. You get to get up close, personal, see a lot of great talent. And it's free.
I can't wait to get out there.
Yeah, well, I've been looking forward.
This weekend, 26th, 27th, and 28th, or excuse me, 28th, 29th, and 30th. You know, we'll get the right weekend dates. The Memorial Amateur Championship at Ansel Hoffman. Thanks, John.
Real quick, the final day, there is a cut after Saturday and Sunday. And then Monday is a cut to the low 33 in ties. So come out Saturday and Sunday to see the entire field.
We look forward to it. Appreciate your time. Thanks much. Back more with Mark Sherman right after this.
It's the Golf to Go Hour with Frank LaRosa.
We are back for our final segment here on the Golf to Go Radio Hour. Hi, I'm Frank LaRosa. I'm with Scott Marsh, and excited to welcome Mr. Mark Sherman. Mark is an old friend. He's a PGA professional, the head golf professional at Green Valley Country Club in Fairfield. Mark, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Frank and Scott. Great to be here.
You know, you have been so generous in allowing us to play down there, and we very much appreciate that. And as we talk, you know, I've been down there for a couple of PGA events, the annual meeting, and so on and so forth. And when you take a look at your facility, which is, I don't know whether it is 100 years old or it's right there, but there's certainly an awful lot of history to talk about.
Yeah, absolutely. So we're not not going to hit our centennial anytime soon, but we're just in 1949. This was the largest cherry orchard in the world. Then the crop became diseased, and a group of landowners, they named Green Valley landowners, bought the property and decided to turn it into a golf course. And so there was a lot of question. We weren't sure who designed the golf course and whatnot, but ultimately, the first tee shot was hit in 1951, actually on April Fool's Day of 1951.
I thought it was a lot older than that. You know, when I look at the mansion, I guess it's what it's called, the you know, the signature building there, it just creates the impression that it's been there forever.
Well, the mansion goes back to the 1800s.
Ah, so okay. Now my history's making sense.
Yep. So this was this goes back to Civil War days, but it was that was just the mansion for the cherry orchard. It was the Jones family that lived there, and then ultimately they sold in the late 40s.
So, Mark, you've been there 30 years. That's a remarkable stay at one facility, and that must mean you're doing something right.
Thanks. Yeah, it's just I mean, some days it seems like I've been here a week, and some days it seems like I have been here 100 years. But no, it's great. It's just kind of been a nice mix that I've been able to play a little bit and just take care of the members. That's my motto, is I just want to take care of the greatest number of members that I can. And I figure if I'm doing something right, then they're going to keep me around.
Well, and as I watch, you know, you kind of interact with the members, and it's obvious they have a tremendous amount of respect for you, and they appreciate you as a person, and they love your sense of humor. So keep on keeping on. It's a golf course that's hard to describe in my mind. I've been trying to tell people what it's like, because some of the holes are, you know, sort of flatland kind of golf, and then and then you've got to be part billy goat for a few of them in there. If a person is standing on the first tee of Green Valley Country Club, tell them what they're going to expect.
Well, I always tell them, so we usually host a USGA qualifier every year, whether it be a men's or women's or seniors event. And I get lots of questions coming in. Hey, how do I play? What's the secret? And I tell them a couple things. I say, when you get on the first tee, I said, you're going to notice trees on both sides. Try and hit it between those trees, and you'll be pretty good all day. And then if you can keep it below the hole, because our greens are outstanding, and they're usually very, very fast. So if you've got uphill putts, and you're in the fairways, you're going to be in pretty good shape.
And you know, you talk about uphill. That first hole, it is uphill. It is a climb, and 10, which is next to it, kind of mirrors that. And there, you know, in the kind of the middle of the course, there's a lot of elevation changes. So when I was watching some of the members walk that course, I'm thinking they're a whole lot stronger than me.
Yes. Well, thankfully we've got a lot of carts too, so it's good. There's the front nine's not too bad. Yeah, the first hole goes up a little bit, and then two right back down to where we flat land it for the front nine. But yeah, starting on number 10, we it's a pretty good hike up 10, down 11, and then 12, 13, and 14 have got some hills to them as well.
You mentioned the greens, and the greens really are remarkable. It's almost difficult to find a ball mark, and they roll so well. You know, hats off to your maintenance crew.
Yes, we my first 28 years here, we had the same superintendent. Ray Story was absolutely outstanding, and he was here for 41 years total. And then a couple years ago, Ray retired, and in came Dan Quinn, our current superintendent, and he's done a fantastic job as well, and just taking the golf course to a new level.
You know, Scott, I remember in December when I was doing the annual awards event for the PGA, and you came down to be with me, and we got you out on the golf course. That was your first time there. What was your impression, and has it changed?
First of all, when you drive in, you feel like you're in Scotland, looking up at a castle as you look atop the hill and you see that mansion. It's such a beautiful, majestic building, and it's just such a great setting for the overall establishment. And being at that event in December was fantastic. You guys host a lot of great events there, and the NCPGA event was certainly one of them. In terms of playing the course, you're right that the fairways are immaculate. The problem was I didn't find a lot of fairways, so I didn't get to experience that a lot. But I had a great time playing there twice. And I think the challenge is there is uphill, but there's a lot of slope too. So when you're trying to hit your second and third shots to try and get position, you've also got to account for the lie. I mean, there's a lot of slope from left to right on that first hole, and then conversely back on number 10 and going up. So you've really got to be able to play golf. It's not just a flat lie every time you're trying to hit your ball there, Mark.
No, it's not. You definitely get some side hill lies, all above your feet and below your feet, and some uphillers. And it's a little challenging trying to hit a wedge shot into that on a pretty steep upslope. Yeah. So I see a lot of chunks going up that hill where they clubbed in the hill a little bit too much. But yeah, we're kind of cut out of the side of the valley a little bit. So even though it seems all flat, our joke here is that everything breaks to Costco, which is at the base of the valley.
That's the key. Okay, good to know.
The ocean doesn't have the pull. It's what Costco's got the pull. So,
well, Costco always has a lot of pull, more so than any ocean, right? So that's understandable. But no, it's a spectacular course. And really, when you get to 10 through 14, you know, on that backside, it's a different type of course than some of the other holes. It's beautiful, well played out. I will say, too, the second time that we played more recently, the wind was picking up in the 20 to 25 mile an hour range. And that certainly makes it a tremendous challenge too.
Yes. We get our afternoon breeze come through, and sometimes it gets a little heavier, and it definitely can wreak havoc with your game and affects the putts a lot as well.
No doubt. And certainly on some of the holes, you have creeks coming across the fairways as well, which I got intimate with during my stay.
We're talking with Mark Sherman. He's head golf professional at Green Valley Country Club in Fairfield. Mark, let's talk a little bit about you. You know, you've been great friends with one of the Northern California PGA section's legends, Steve Mancinella from Fresno. And Steve is one of the first members of the Northern California PGA Hall of Fame. How'd you hook up with Steve, and where was that in your career?
Well, actually, I met Steve. So I'm from Redding originally. Anderson, most people don't know where Anderson is, so I say I'm from Redding. But so I came from Redding, and I was recruited to go play golf at Fresno State out of high school. And so I showed up in Fresno in 1979, Sunnyside, where Steve is, was one of the courses of the rotation where we got to play on the golf team. And so I met him a couple times, and we kind of, he would joke with us and whatnot, and we just kind of struck off as friends, and then he hired me to work when I was in college a little bit, and we'd get to come out to Sunnyside on ladies guest days. And it was another friend of mine, Eric Peterson, who was on our team, and Eric and I would show up at Sunnyside at 7 o'clock on Tuesday or Thursday mornings for their ladies guest days, and we'd work the parking lot and putting bags on carts and things like that. And he was very generous. He would pay us you know, six Titleist Pro Trajectory golf balls each. So yeah. I just started working for Steve part-time, and then when I graduated from college, he hired me on full-time, and I got into the business, and ultimately I worked for Steve for about 10 years.
And for the uninitiated, for everything Ken Morton is for here in Northern California and Sacramento area, Mr. Mancinella certainly is in the Fresno area. He's referred to as the Godfather down there.
Yes, no doubt. It's funny. We thought when we first got to school, we were looking at Steve, and we thought, wow, this guy must be getting close to retiring. He's got to be about 65 years old. And his joke was always that his head had gone through three bodies, but... But anyway, we found out Steve was only 40, so he'd had a hard life. No, he's a great man. I talk to him still every every week or two, and he's just a great man. He's still hanging out at the club, been there for about 54 years now.
You know, the Northern California PGA just had the first ever Legends Golf Tournament, and the you had to be 70 years of age to enter, and the oldest guy was 93, Ken Towns, but Steve did not play, but he did come up to have lunch with the 32 players and you know, trade slaps on the back and stories, and it was so much fun watching them all kind of you know, be with each other again.
Yeah, it's a great fraternity that we've all got, and I've gotten to know guys over the years, but working for Steve, I learned to hang around a lot of those guys too. I mean, I remember Ken Towns vividly. He was just a great man, and is a great man, and it's just to meet all those guys was really cool, and it's kind of helped me in my career, understanding that it's not just the way people think now, but ultimately we're looking after our members, and that's kind of why we're here.
Sure, and those guys were certainly mentors. What's the membership status at Green Valley? Do you have memberships open? And if so, how would you go about inquiring?
So we have a few memberships available. The initiation fee is going up on July 1st. It's a pretty good deal considering where we are, but it's going to go up to 10 grand on the 1st of July. And then they can contact our membership coordinator, Lisa Satana. We're at 707-864-1101. That's the best way to get a hold of Lisa. Or check out our website, greenvalleycc.com. There you can find it out there too. But we are getting very close to being full. We're probably 4 or 6 memberships away from being full until we would create a waiting list.
Wow. That's an amazing deal, I have to say, because I know how popular golf is right now and where some of the membership fees are at courses in Northern California. And for the quality of the course that you have there and the amenities too, we had a chance to have some food there, and the food is fantastic also. That's a great deal, Mark.
It really is a good deal. And, it's amazing what's happened, the pandemic, best thing for golf since Tiger, but it's crazy how golf is really taken off, and it's been good because as an industry, we were struggling, as a club, we were struggling, and now we've got lots of action going on now. It's great.
That's great.
Check out the website, check out Green Valley Country Club. And if you get down there, shake the hand of Mr. Mark Sherman, PGA. He is the head golf professional for 30 years there, and he knows what he's doing, and he's a fun guy to be around. Mark, thanks for spending some time with us on Golf to Go. We appreciate it. Look forward to seeing you down the road.
Great. Thanks, Frank. Thanks, Scott.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mark Sherman, and all our guests this show, this Golf to Go Radio Hour. This is Frank LaRosa. Scott Marsh, along with me every week, we try to bring you something new, something different, something fun in the world of golf here in Northern California. Back next week. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you then.